We alighted and Stitch became interested in sniffing the huge number of bushes. The small, round building was like all other buildings, exquisitely beautiful and decorated with precious stones in an ornamental pattern. "This is a temple," Manal told me. "We don't have churches and priests of various beliefs as on the surface, but we do have small temples where a priest and priestess act as a link to the Godhead. There's only one divine power. We are aware of that here, and if we aren't, we soon discover it. Come with me." I trotted after my friend with their long, fair hair, into the round building. A wide beam of light fell from the open roof. I couldn't understand where it came from. I knelt down like Manal. It felt right. I felt encircled by the light, overwhelmed by gentle warmth as all tensions and unwelcome thoughts dissolved and vanished. I was the light and the light was me. It wasn't just a lovely thought, it was the truth. The existence was literally an existence made of light. I don't know if I was asleep or having a vision. I had knelt in respect for the light, and had closed my eyes. When I opened them, I was sitting on a soft sofa in front of the wide light beam. A voice came from it and I shivered with goose pimples. It was so holy. So sacred. Humans. Human children. A wonderful existence was created for you on beautiful, tranquil Earth, as part of a great family. You worked together, ate and drank together, slept together, and life was all enjoyment, beauty, and love. Above all, love. This lasted for a relatively short time. When darkness came forth and nearly extinguished the light, you were blinded by acceptance. You accepted a life of love and you accepted, without question, the encroaching darkness. You believed things were as they should be. This became a new lifestyle and encouraged alien influences and dark deeds. The darkness seeped into your minds in many ways, often disguised as light. You invented religions, which was unnecessary, as there is only one God consciousness. You gave this God as many guises as grains of sand on a beach. You believed you had chosen or inherited a religion full of mysticism, stimulating your brains. You were unquestioning. You were caught in your own trap and were inspired to struggle, to be envious and jealous. Golden Mammon was the root of all inspiration. "All this is going to change, isn't it?" I objected. "The new belief for the new age will be in one leader, the God within us who leads to the highest source." "Well answered, Timothy. You may proceed." The voice was happy and friendly, and Manal patted me gently on the shoulder. "You're one of us officially now, Tim," he whispered. "You have met one of the Holy Ones. Do you have those here too?" I wondered in surprise. "I didn't think you had Holy Ones as we do on Earth." "We don't." Manal sounded slightly offended. "This is a help center. Our temples welcome all those in need of help and support. Our priests and priestesses are wise, highly developed beings who can cure mental disorder and other problems. I wanted you to know that there are centers like these across our world. You ought to have them too." "I am no longer an earthling," I interrupted him. "But these places would definitely be useful on the surface. It's nice to know there are temples like these." "Everyone comes here," Manal replied. "There are parties, singing, dancing, and various meetings. The temples have all kinds of uses, apart from protection and sanctuary for those who most need it. And it doesn't cost a thing." This last sentence was accompanied by a peal of laughter. The hovercraft was outside, as was Titch, progressing slowly and calmly from shrub to shrub. His tail held high. He nearly bowled us over with happiness when we eventually emerged from the strange house. The journey continued. We alighted at the entrance to a magnificent, circular amphitheater with stairs descending to an oval stage. I thought it was the Colosseum at Rome. On the stage was a large oval table. 12 men and women were seated around it. I realized it was the Council of 12 Intellos. "Let's go and meet them," suggested Manal eagerly. "We don't want to disturb them." I didn't want to end up in an investigation which was none of my business.
"We won't.
Come on, Tim and Titch." He hurried down the circular flight of stairs and I followed doubtfully. Titch was busy trying to smell everything. As we arrived, a man rose and embraced Manuel and then me. It was Saint Germain. Titch was patted too. "Welcome. Sit by me, Tim, and learn a little about our society and the problems which arise here." I looked around the table. Saint Germain explained who the people were and the offices they held. There were 6 men and 6 women. "An equal distribution," I remarked. "That doesn't happen on Earth. There are no differences in the rights of men and women here," Saint Germain replied. "The council discusses and makes decisions about possible crimes, which are rare, arguments between neighbors, also rare, food problems, and new nourishment ideas. And, of course, our eternal discussion, the surface of the Earth and how we can save it. Great things are happening up there." He pointed to the sky. "And there will soon be changes for the Earthlings. They have manhandled our wounded planet so harshly that the damage is obvious even here. We can't allow that. But who can control the wind? No one can. So something must be done before things decline seriously for us because of the negligence and ignorance of Earthlings." A woman was speaking. She looked middle-aged, tall, dark-haired, and beautiful. Her name was Lady Nada. "I lived on the Earth a long time ago," she continued. "At that time, singing was a great experience, and there were many genres for various voices. Now singing seems to be an incessant out-of-tune screech. There are no melodies. Very few singers have any training like we had. The music now played on Earth is damaging the planet. It damages the people who listen and the energy of the tones. Music can be exalting, but it is destructive when there is no harmony. I want to help with those changes. The music of the spheres shall be restored to Mother Earth." There was approval of this and some clapping. "The imminent changes will include even your work, my dear Lady Nada," remarked a man's voice. "I'm Melchizedek, King of Kings, and I'm going to introduce some sense to these Earthlings. Good manners and positive thinking." The man was incredibly impressive. He was tall and strong, yet lithe. He had long, wavy dark hair and his eyes were bright and captivating. They were brown with golden flecks. He had a clear and handsome profile, emanating strength and love. I thought there was something Indian in his appearance. His smile was incredibly bright and friendly. When he smiled, you smiled too, and enjoyed smiling in his company. At the moment, most of our meetings in Agartha are about helping our Earth neighbors, Saint Germain resumed. "This boy," he was indicating me, "will help us. He hasn't been here long, and has just married our Sicily." Everyone cheered, and I could feel myself blushing. "Manuel saved the day. We're on a field trip," he called. "Please may we return for further information at a later date." We bowed low and respectfully to the distinguished assembly, and Manuel and I retreated. Titch didn't. He circled the whole table, sniffing at each person, being patted, and licking in return. When he came back to us, he stood up on his hind legs, a gesture which denoted approval. He was entitled to the ensuing applause. The loyal, or previously programmed, hovercraft was waiting for us. I felt exhausted after the council meeting and Manuel suggested that we should continue the next day. Thus I hurried home to my waiting wife. Next headline. 23. Visiting the in-laws. "I'm coming with you today," declared Sicily. She was standing at the foot of the bed, and the morning light swathed her like a glittering, shimmering aura. "We're going to the Bridge of Mists. The boundary between Telos and its surroundings and the enormous country of the fifth dimension. You've been to Shambhala." "Well, very briefly indeed," I replied. "I'd like to see more of it." "You will, darling. My parents live there, and we are going to visit. At long last," I thought. "I hope they'll like me." "What if they don't like me? Then they'll dissolve our love union sensitively. But it won't happen. We love each other. And that's the most important thing for them. Love is paramount from the fifth dimension upwards. Agartha is love. Hurry up and get changed. I've ordered a hovercraft. Titch is coming with us. Titch wolfed down his breakfast of vegetarian dog food, which he had come to enjoy. I don't think he'd forgotten the meat he used to eat. But Titch is probably the only Great Dane alive who lives on vegetables and appreciates them. I hadn't seen many dogs of his size here, but then again, I hadn't seen many animals here at all. I dressed in a white shirt and white trousers, and put a diamond-studded white collar on Titch. Cicilla was in a pink creation with a matching wide-brimmed hat. She looked amazing. We entered the hovercraft, which immediately gained altitude. My grandmother used to sing this Swedish marching song, "In summer's sunny glow, through woods and fields we go, worries we do not know, singing all the way, hooray, hooray." I whistled it now as the ground disappeared and we ascended to a good height. I'm actually pretty good at whistling. My wife gave me an amused look. "That was a lovely tune," she smiled and said. "I can play more old Swedish songs on the piano," I replied, "if we can get hold of one." "I know which instrument you mean," returned Cicilla. "We can probably create one if you like." I hadn't thought of that, but this was obviously the land of opportunities. I decided to create a grand piano at home as soon as possible. Creative forces were unrestrained here in Agartha, as long as they were positive. This was something I'd learned right from my first time here, otherwise I wouldn't have had a bed to sleep in. Cicilla had created a lovely home for us. It was pretty, cozy, and practical. The hovercraft headed downwards and landed in a place so misty that you could hardly see your hand in front of your face. Titch walked close to me, he didn't like being out of sight. Cicilla waved both hands and the fog dissipated slightly so that we could make out the bridge we were standing on, with its tall, carved railings reaching up and forming an archway above us. Under the bridge ran clear rapids, culminating in a small waterfall a little further downstream. I could just make out the contours of a forest on either side. "We are on the bridge which separates the third and fifth dimensions," she announced.
"You mean the third and fourth dimensions?" I suggested.
"No, I mean the third and the fifth. The fourth doesn't exist here," she replied. It sounded strange to me, but I let it go for now. I didn't realize how soon I would find out more. The bridge of mists furnished us with wet feet and shrouded us in fog, yet in some way it was delightful. I had the feeling that this was the entrance to something amazing. The air was not as damp and close as the name of the bridge implied. It was as though the mists became part of us, a magic charm, an illusion created as we crossed over. It was a long bridge, and as our feet glided across the wet planks, the air around us lightened. We held hands so that we wouldn't slip. Titch was right at my side on a short lead. Suddenly, as if someone had pulled up a blind, or the curtain was rising at the theater, the mist vanished and there was a beautiful view. We were no longer on the bridge, but hovering above golden gravel, glittering in the sunshine beaming down onto the magnificent town of Shambhala. I recognized the towers and pinnacles rising towards the light which flashed from the precious stones used to build the town. It was so lovely it brought tears to my eyes, and I don't even like cities. My wife covered my eyes with her hands and then stroked my head, from the crown down to my ears, mumbling something the whole time. Another strange transformation took place. The air was full of sound. I could see attractive, shimmering people moving along the same golden road with us, and I could hear them talking to each other in another language. Many had pets with them and they looked and smiled at Titch, who didn't growl, but eyed them slightly suspiciously in return. It was as busy as any city, yet somehow lovely and calm. "I've directed your thinking and understanding into the fifth dimension," said Cicilla. "You can't stay here with me without becoming part of the whole. Now you'll be able to talk to anybody without even moving your lips. Don't be worried about not understanding the language, as your brain will process it as easily as any other conversation." She had hardly finished speaking when a young couple stopped us. "We were just admiring your dog," the man said, in my head. "We've never seen that breed before. Where do you come from?" And, hey presto, I only needed to think the answer, and the man understood at once.
The woman crouched down to Titch, who licked her hand politely. "A Great Dane," she echoed with a smile. "We have learned the names of most countries on the surface, and Denmark is no exception. Are the people there especially big?" I couldn't help laughing, as I thought of the short, good-natured Danes I have met, and all four of us ended up chuckling, and then Titch stood to attention, which caused even more laughter. However, my wife now bade farewell to the couple and we hurried on. It wasn't long before we had crossed many streets and were by a grand house set in a wonderful garden with a sparkling, woven gate. My wife pressed a button and the gate opened. As we strode along the path of precious stones, I noticed that, while the garden held an array of plants, they were somewhat chaotically displayed. Everything seemed to bloom where it wanted, without design. It was a wild kind of beauty which only nature can achieve. We knocked on the great door and heard the latch click open. We entered a massive, roofless hall where leafy branches entwined unimpeded around the walls. "Welcome to my parents' home," called my wife, gesturing with arms wide. The dreaded moment was upon us. There they were, the two people who must be my in-laws. I don't know how they got there. The hall had been empty moments before. "Kneel," hissed Sicily between her teeth. She bowed so low that her wide-brimmed, pink hat fell off. That got a laugh. Her father raised me up with both hands and looked deep into my eyes. Then he pulled me towards him and welcomed me with a pat on the back. "I can see you're a good man," he said, as I faced him shyly. Not that I'm usually shy, but he was incredibly impressive. He had the air of a master, I reflected, without really knowing how a master would look. He was an upright man with huge charm. His wavy, white hair reached his shoulders and he had a straight mustache and short beard. His eyes were as deep blue as the Atlantic. "I'm Fayo, and you can call me that, as we have no other titles apart from father and mother. We'll have some tea and a chat in just a moment, but first I'd like you to meet my wife. Her name's Keola." I knelt at once to Sicily's mother. She was exceedingly pretty, and I could see the similarity to my wife. She wasn't as tall as her husband, and her gleaming, silvery white hair, piled high on her head, was interlaced with pearls. She wore a white dress and over it a cloak of midnight blue shimmering like the night sky. She commanded respect, but wasn't gentle and friendly like her daughter. Gravely, this austere lady looked me right in the eye and said, "I hope you fulfill our desire for a loving, devoted son-in-law. I like what I see, and bid you welcome. You may kiss my hand." She held out a slender, finely shaped hand with rings on each finger. I kissed it, narrowly avoiding a shiver. She emanated coldness in the same way as my wife emanates warmth. When I arose, she and Sicily withdrew, and my father-in-law beckoned me to follow him. We went upstairs and entered a place like an atrium from ancient days. Fayo invited me to sit on a sofa. Although I knew how to create certain products, I don't know how he did it. On the table suddenly a lovely tea set and a plate of sandwiches and cakes appeared. "Don't be scared of my wife," he smiled, patting my knee. "Everybody is. She can be offish with strangers, but deep inside, she has a heart of gold." I had my own opinion about that. But I said nothing. I really liked Fayo. "It feels strange to be in the fifth dimension without going through the fourth," I ventured. Fayo guffawed. "Didn't Sicily explain to you, Tim?" he asked. "She should have, but maybe she couldn't find the right words. You already know about our religion here. We all share the same belief, without exception. I have to include the surface in my answer. You know there is about to be a tremendous transformation there. Three dimensions encompass height, width, and depth. If we add time to these three, we are into the fourth dimension, where we can consider time from outside. Unconsciously, and this is important, people on the surface are passing from the fourth to the fifth dimension, where full consciousness reigns. This goes a long way in explaining people's current confusion, the stress, curious decisions, time that rushes away, karma which is immediately balanced, and so forth. The strangest thing of all is that surface dwellers have the opportunity to progress directly from the third to the fifth dimension. They have been submerged for 13,000 years in the third dimension, manipulated by the Anunnaki. The bells of freedom are ringing for them now. The time of reincarnation is past, and life will become part of the whole. According to legend, the Anunnaki was a group of Sumerian and Babylonian gods from the planet Nibiru. Their leader was called Anu. He craved power and wanted to rule the earth. He planned to enslave the existing population and succeeded beyond expectation, with slavery lasting for thousands of years. He controlled humanity, and managed to convince people he was their god. The dark forces at his command acted as slaves, and the blossoming, loving earth, created in the beginning by a different god, was weakened by his tyranny. He prevented distinguished inventors like Tesla and Morey from completing their inventions, by destroying them. He exercised total control over any undesirable development which threatened his power. People were unaware of his existence and influence until recently. Only now is the veil of darkness being torn asunder and light finally penetrating. In the third dimension, which we want them to leave, there are opposing energies like good and bad, love and hate, joy and grief, and above all, life and death. In higher dimensions these don't exist. Your controlling ego no longer dominates your world. Instead, the higher self takes over, and the creation and the unity dominate in everyone. In short, the fourth dimension is the astral plane, populated by ghosts and specters. I was overwhelmed. I just about managed to say thank you, and my father-in-law smiled indulgently. For those who have lived on the surface most of their lives, this is strange news indeed, whereas we have been aware of this since childhood. We need to be able to explain to Earthlings where they are when they get here. They can forget all about the fourth dimension. It has a certain type of clientele, and some Earthlings may choose to move there. That is their business. There is still free will on Earth. We will assist those who wish it. We take into account the choice of the individual. What a job! I groaned. There are many of us, my father-in-law said, smiling, a great many, and we will achieve our goal. You've already noticed that Agartha is a pleasant place to live, free from toxins and evil. So the fourth dimension is the astral world, I mumbled. Yes, and now you know, you've no need to dwell on it any further. We have other things to discuss, your immediate duty here, for instance. Have you decided what work you will do? Aren't I going to be some kind of liaison between Agartha and the surface? I suggested uncertainly. It just so happens that I am chairman of the Great Circle here in Shambhala, and as my son-in-law, you are entitled to a position among us. Of course, this is your choice, but we would not appreciate you commuting between the surface and Sicilia, who would be left on her own. It would be better for you to stay here and make your home in Shambhala or somewhere nearby. What would the job involve? I inquired, quaking inwardly. Would I have to leave grandmother and my friends in Talos? Didn't I already have work there with Manol? As you are well acquainted with the Earth's surface, its inhabitants, its history, and its countries, your mission here would be as Earth's ambassador, as you call it. You would partake in all things pertaining to the Earth. What do you think? It sounds just like what Manol suggested recently, but without the incessant travel, I cried in delight. I accept without hesitation. Then that's all arranged. My father-in-law patted my shoulder in contentment. It means you don't have to travel to the surface, at least, only occasionally. You may live where you want, but your office will naturally be in Talos, as surface dwellers tend to arrive the first. There will be problems to solve. You'll interview Earthlings and assess their suitability for immigration. You are welcome to have an assistant, as you will certainly need one. May I have Manol? I asked eagerly, and my father-in-law agreed at once. I am on a study trip just at the moment, I continued. What should we do about that? Carry on. You need to learn as much as you can, replied Theo. Then we'll initiate you into the fifth dimension. That's an obvious stipulation for this kind of work. Hello, ladies. My mother-in-law and wife appeared suddenly out of nowhere. They were both very cheerful, and I noticed that my mother-in-law's laugh rang out as happily as my wife's. She came and gave me a big hug, at last. We have to go home, Sicilia announced, because we are about to receive VIPs from the surface. You and I must welcome Cardinal Reinfort from the Vatican. The hovercraft was waiting at the door, and we bid each other a hasty farewell. Titch seemed very relieved to be going home. His charm hadn't been fully appreciated in this place, so he licked any part of me he could find and flopped down beside me in the vehicle with a deep sigh. Next headline. 24. The Cardinal from the Vatican. Congratulations. Your new job starts now, with a celebrity from the Vatican, my wife teased, as we alighted from the hovercraft. Manuel was waiting at home for us, with Valencio and a well-groomed man of medium height in a suit. I realized this must be Cardinal Reinfort. It crossed my mind that I ought to genuflect. I scanned his face, which was gentle and friendly, pale, with a slightly prominent nose, and expressive eyes. There were finely drawn lines around his eyes and mouth. His head was clean-shaven, apart from a ring of graying hair on his crown. He seemed very pleasant. He was wearing a mauve shirt and a well-tailored suit of grey. I didn't have time to kneel. As a non-Catholic, it's a difficult decision. To my surprise, he knelt elegantly and kissed my hand. Good grief, I thought, falling back on my grandmother's expression, is the man mad? Thank you. He cried in faultless English, rising swiftly. I am most grateful to you for looking after my ward, Valencio. I guessed as soon as he disappeared that he would come here, as I had just told him about Agatha, never having been here myself. When I was young, before I became a prelate, I met a sailor who recounted stories about your country, and I have always wanted to visit. The Pope gave me the task of finding the boy and asking him to return. The Pope can never openly acknowledge his paternity, but I can help Valencio, if he wants to come home. I have tried to be a father to him since he was born. Valencio would be brought up as a cardinal, but we will respect his wishes. I took the old gentleman's arm and led him into the house. My wife managed to produce a cup of strong coffee, which the prelate drank with pleasure. Would your eminence care to see more of this country inside the earth? I asked, still shaken that the old priest had knelt to me. Titch sniffed at the cardinal, licked his hand, and sat down beside him. As usual, my sensible dog demonstrated his positive feelings. Thank you, I would like that. Reinfort nodded and smiled. It would be delightful. I may wish to stay. The inner workings of the Vatican are becoming too much for me. My son is here, and has already expressed a desire to remain here. And, as far as I understand, you believe in the same God, don't you? Sicilia replied, the light of the Creator derives from the inexhaustible source, the source of life. We live in unison with the source, the light, and each other. Together, these represent God's love for us. Said the cardinal thoughtfully. I've never heard it put like that before, but it sounds fine. I can agree with that without any qualms. I'm grateful to be allowed to stay here a few days and get to know you better, with Valencio, or Val as I usually call him. I can undertake to show your eminence around, said Manuel, who had been as quiet as a mouse until now, sitting beside the prelate. We have priests who can elaborate on our spiritual philosophy. And anyway, you should experience our wonderful countryside. There's a good guest house in Tilos where you could stay. If I could stay with Valencio, then I would happily accept. The cardinal rose, bowing first to my wife and then to me. He accompanied Manuel to the hovercraft. He'll want to stay here, remarked my wife with satisfaction. What a nice man. I hurried to grandmother with news of the visit. She and her new husband Lex were eating lunch in the garden when I turned up. Grandmother hugged me. My dear boy, she exclaimed. I was beginning to wonder where you'd got to. We've been to some very exciting places, including a botanical garden with plants from the surface. Imagine that. There were colt's foot, blue anemones, lilies of the valley, and many more of my favorites.